It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Theriot and Mary Jo Foley are here with a very big show. We're going to talk about progressive web apps. We're going to, we got a lot to talk about. A big scoop from Paul Theriot came in over the weekend, all about what is ahead for Windows 10. It's a big year. Paul will explicate. Mary Jo will deflect. I don't know what she'll do. She'll talk about it too. And some support changes coming for Windows 10 and Office users in enterprise and education. It's coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Theriot and Mary Jo Foley, episode 556, recorded Wednesday, February 7th, 2018. 90% cacao, 10% PWA. Windows Weekly is brought to you by IT Pro TV, the fun and entertaining way to sharpen your IT skills. Visit itpro.tv/WW and use the code WW30 to get a free 7-day trial plus 30% off a monthly membership for the lifetime of your active subscription. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/windows. And by WordPress. Make WordPress.com your online home. Plans start at just $4 a month. Go to WordPress.com/windows to get 15% off your brand new website today. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we cover Windows Weekly. With Paul Theriot. It's an obvious name. We could have done something clever, but what the hell? Paul Theriot is here, Theriot.com. He's the author of many books at leanpub.com and a astute Microsoft watcher. Mary Jo Foley is so astute, her blog URL is all about Microsoft.com. And between Mary Jo Foley and Paul Theriot, I think we got the bases covered. An occasional appearance by Brad.
Look, it's him as a fireman.
Oh, it's Opie, the little kid from he does look Mayberry.
Like is that Brad?
That's Brad when he was little.
I keep trying to tell Brad that he doesn't have to share everything, and he just doesn't. He doesn't listen.
Just goes with it. That's pretty cute, though.
He'll be really, back. That's where we're going with that one.
He'll be back. I tell you, I love my team. That's all I can say. Fire Marshal Brad says we're okay. We're go for Windows Weekly.
All right.
2018, a transition year. How so? Why do you say that?
Why do we say that? Who said that? Did I say that?
You, Paul,
I think you perhaps said that.
Let me just.
Well, yeah. So from the Google. there was a massive leak of information over the weekend regarding Windows 10 and kind of a revised
on Theriot.com. Point out
a big exclusive. This is why I'm glad I'm a premium member.
Yeah, a lot of misunderstandings about this thing too. I was kind of. It actually wasn't, I was going to say humorous. Actually, it was kind of sad to watch people kind of completely misunderstand what's happening. But as we know, last year, Microsoft.
Maybe it's the big bonfire picture that you put.
Yeah, right. It's supposed to be a dumpster fire, but I was trying to be polite. I should say right up front. I think that what they're doing is smart, and I think this is necessary.
This info comes from your sources?
This info comes from a massive cache of internal documentation.
That were inadvertently left in the backseat pocket.
Within my eyesight and burned into my brain.
Okay, good. Yeah, so you feel confident that this is the plan?
Yeah, like 100%.
100%.
So, by the way, obviously, there are holes in the sense that there might be other bits of information tied to this. We don't know how Microsoft intended originally to communicate this publicly, right? But what we do know is that last year Microsoft released at least two new versions of, or I should say, product SKUs or product editions of Windows 10. I've often argued for the fact that they need to have less, you know, rather than more of that stuff. One was that Windows 10 Pro for workstation SKU, which is aimed at obviously high-end workstations. And then the other one was Windows 10S, which was ostensibly aimed at education, but really wasn't relegated just to education. The point was they're trying to streamline Windows in a way that will allow them to get rid of legacy technologies over time. The problem with Windows 10S, you know, as I've said so many times, is that it wasn't a process. It was just kind of a hard stop. And that I think most people would agree we need to get to that thing. But the way that they did it was perhaps not the best approach. But the other aspect there, though, is I think there was some confusion about what this thing was, you know, and it's, you know, people like us who follow technology or follow Microsoft in particular would look at the Windows product lineup and try to slot this thing in somewhere. Where is this thing? Is it like a Windows 10 Home with some extra stuff? Is it Windows 10 Pro with, you know, minus some stuff or whatever? The terminology that Microsoft eventually came up with was that it's a mode of Windows 10 Pro, that it's this thing is Windows 10's Pro, but it's running in this mode where we're artificially cutting off certain capabilities. And that's a very accurate way to say it. You might have noticed that no PC maker shipped a single non-educational Windows 10S-based computer last year. In fact, I would argue that no PC maker shipped a educational Windows 10S PC last year. I don't believe there's any evidence of a single educational institution adopting that platform and rolling it out to any degree. But
so whatever. Who bought this then?
Nobody.
Surface... Can I say something here? Because I remember, where was this? Ignite. Mm-hmm. Microsoft said they were going to be Windows 10 S PCs starting at $275 coming out from a bunch of partners. And they listed Acer, HP, Lenovo, and Fujitsu. Did those just never ship?
No. So the big confusion, and what you're referring to, by the way, are educational computers, right? These aren't things where you would go to a retail store and buy them. These are educational PCs.
Well, they called them... They called them Windows 10S devices for Microsoft 365 F1, so first-line worker.
Oh, okay. Well,
remember those ones?
Yeah, I don't think those ever... I mean, I'm not saying they don't exist.
But, what is that? That means somebody's not good enough to get a real computer?
Yeah. Like, you know, people who are in customer service.
Oh, frontline. Yeah.
I don't mean to say that they're not offered. What I'm saying is I don't think these things ever sold to any degree. We've never heard one success story from any... school, or in this case, enterprise customer, whatever it is, that's adopted Windows 10. It's just never happened. Yeah. The one mainstream computer that ships with it, of course, is Surface Laptop. Microsoft, very conspicuously, when they talk about Windows 10S, by the way, even internally, do not give any data for Surface Laptop conversion to Windows 10 Pro. I believe it to be very close to 100%, but you know, that's my opinion, whatever. So I think obviously a strategy change was needed on this thing. And again, I want to stress this because Mary Jo and I joke about this, you know, because I'm so critical of Windows 10S. It's important to but it's not black and white. Like I do believe that this is the right vision for Windows long term. The exception I have with it is that hard stop thing that they aren't allowing people to move into it more, you know, more gradually. In fact, this is a little kind of a side tangent, but I was thinking about the life cycle of versions of Windows that cannot run the Microsoft Store apps, which meaning Windows 7 and Windows 8.1. And when do those products fall out of support? I think for Windows 7, it's 2020, if I'm not mistaken, January 2020. And then for Windows 8.1 is 2023, 5 years from now?
Yep.
It occurred to me while writing about this other thing we're about to talk about that would be the time frame. That should be the time frame because Windows 10S, as we're calling it today, relies on Windows Store apps pretty much, or verified apps essentially. But this platform is designed not to run the old stuff, or it's limited so that it cannot. That would be the right time frame, right? When I say that we need time to get from here to there, there it is. 5 years. That's a perfect time frame. To phase out support for desktop apps, phase them out with the desktop operating systems that can only run those apps, you know. But whatever, that's just a side.
But I think that will never happen.
Yeah, no, of course not. But that's
because
said,
of
know,
enterprises, right?
Oh, there you go. Okay, that's a good point too. Yeah, fair enough. I live in a white tower.
You live in a bubble. You live in this weird bubble.
I live in a fantasy land where everything works the way I want it to. That's true. I do wish the world was a different way than it is. But, you know, the one thing that's kind of marked Windows 10S, it's only been around for like 8 months. It's not like we've been suffering through this for a long time or anything, but it is sort of a lack of flexibility on Microsoft's part. You know, I've argued in the past, like, you got to give people the ability to run that one app that they need or to install the drivers that they want for their printer or their scanner or their mouse. You know, Microsoft's own mouse, the Surface Precision mouse, has drivers that are only their desktop based. You can't install them on a Surface laptop. Which is crazy, unless you install Windows 10 Pro. So anyway, I've had my opinions about that, and I've made my arguments for doing certain things. But I would say that this transitional year thing, which is the subject of that article, part of it is this flexibility, kind of newfound flexibility on Windows 10S, right? And so Windows 10S, as we know it, appears to be going away completely. And what they're going to do instead is allow each mainstream version of Windows 10 to run in this mode that businesses can optionally enable this for their users. PC makers can optionally ship PCs in that mode, but not just Windows 10 Pro. They can do it for Windows 10 Home, which might be less expensive. The other issue with Windows 10S, well, one of the many other issues with the Windows 10S, I guess, is that the upgrade to Windows 10 Pro, which is what has been the case so far, has been a temporary condition, although it hasn't gone away yet. They've already extended it at least once. You know, in other words, when they announced it, they said, look, you know, whatever the time frame was, 6 months or whatever, you can upgrade to Pro for free. And at the time, I was like, look, you got to, if you're going to ship this thing called S, you got to let them go to Pro for free all the time. You can't lock people into this, because what will happen is 6 or 7 or 9 months down the road, someone's going to go to upgrade and it's going to say, hey, this costs whatever the price was, $50, $100. And it's like, wait, what? You know, it's like, I want to run Chrome, or I just bought a new printer and I want to install the drivers. And now you're telling me I have to pay you more to be able to do this thing that Windows should just be able to do. It feels like kind of a gotcha, you know? And I always felt like that was going to be kind of a sore spot for future upgraders whenever that time frame ran out. That's not actually going away on Windows 10 Pro. I actually don't know what the deal is on Enterprise, although I think the way Enterprise licensing works is if you buy a version, you can buy different versions of Windows, or I should say licensed versions of Windows that do or do not have downgrade rights and so forth. I don't think that they would ever artificially constrain or prevent enterprises from switching from S to Pro, you know, nor do I think they would charge extra for that, but that I don't know. But the thing that's interesting and new is that for Windows 10 Home, the cost of that thing to PC makers is the same. So if you get Windows 10 Home in S mode, or Windows 10 Home not in S mode, no cost difference. And if you want to go, if you as an individual buy a computer, which you might do on a low-end computer, right, to a normal person, a $279 or $400 computer, whatever it might be, if you get that thing in S mode and you discover you can't install Chrome or iTunes or the drivers or whatever it is, you can upgrade to Pro to Home, sorry, for free. And there you go. That actually does answer one of my big complaints about Windows 10S as originally envisioned.
So can I throw in some things about Windows 10S? Not to defend it or anything, but I don't know if you remember this. Last July, I went and looked it up. We were at the Microsoft Partner Show, and I remember you came for a day or something, and I said to you, guess what? Windows 10S is actually a mode of Windows 10 Pro.
And yeah, they started talking about it that way. Yeah.
What? And I'm like, yeah. I said,
I argued at the time was that it was the opposite of that. I said Windows 10 Pro is a mode of Windows 10S. Yeah. But actually, I've come to my original assessment was
the other way. Right?
Yeah, the way they describe it is very good, and it is correct.
So what was interesting was they never really publicized that, right? Like, they told me that in a meeting I went to, and they said, well, you know, the real name of Windows 10S is Windows 10 Pro in S mode. And I was like, it is? They're like, yeah, it's just Windows 10 Pro locked down. That's what it is.
You know, they could have solved a lot of problems by communicating that on day one.
I know.
Because once you understand that that's what it is, it starts to make sense.
It does. And then at Ignite, when they announced Windows 10S, with the Windows 10 Enterprise in S mode, I remember saying to the guy, wait, so is every flavor of Windows 10 going to have an S mode? And he said, well, we've only announced Pro and Enterprise. But then I also heard about, you know, them talking about Windows 10S powering things like kiosks and signs. So I'm like, so there must be also a Windows 10 IoT in S mode somewhere.
Interesting.
And then, you know, and then Microsoft accidentally at the end of last week, when they were announcing the Bug Bash quests, announced there is a Windows 10 Home in S mode. So I'm like, okay.
Prior to that, maybe a week prior to that, they had released a build of the Insider Preview, which I installed. Right. And I said, well, it's interesting because I'm testing it on Windows 10S and on Windows 10 Pro.
Yeah.
And when I had heard, remember there was a little bit of confusion a few weeks back or a month or so ago, whatever it was. Some insiders had installed the new build at the time on Windows 10S. And they said, hey, this thing says Windows 10 Pro now. Did this screw up Windows 10S? I'm trying to run Windows 10S.
Yeah.
And Microsoft said, no, it's just the desktop branding thing. Don't worry about that. If you try to run a desktop app, you'll find that it behaves as it did before. And they did, and that was true. And it was like, okay, they'll probably change it back to S in a later build.
Yeah.
Again, I don't remember the exact details, but a couple of builds ago, let's say I installed the build on my S test machine and I saw that it said Windows 10 Pro in S mode. And I said, well, that's interesting. And I wrote an article at the time where I said, I think they've just changed the name of Windows 10S, you know, to this thing.
Yeah. It's actually that they went public with the name that it always was, but never made it clear that that was the name.
But they're also expanding it. Yeah. They're expanding it to more versions.
To home, right?
To home.
Yeah. So there's all that Windows 10S stuff, right? Like, I don't feel like it's Windows 10S going away. I feel like it's just Microsoft being clear, finally, about what Windows 10S is, right?
Well, okay, but if you were to look at, I would say it's almost like Windows 10S V2, you know, or something. You know, you could kind of think of it that way. And and if you look at from the moment they announced Windows 10S through, you know, the end of the year, the beginning of this year, there are various little milestones where they kind of adapt things, right? So one was the frontline worker piece that you were talking about, which actually I had forgotten about. One was when they extended the timeline for people who were going to get the free upgrade. They've kind of been adapting it over time. And if you think about it going to home in this case, and possibly, I don't know anything about the IoT stuff, but you could kind of see this mode being applied to different things.
Mm-hmm.
And you combine it with a new flexibility on the upgrade, right? I think for a SKU like Pro, which is always a lot more expensive than home, it makes sense to charge the user at some point for that upgrade, right? Yeah. As long as they understand when they go in that you do have some amount of time to get that free.
Yeah.
I love that they've added the ability to make it free for home users. You know, we often complain that home users are kind of screwed. They're the ones who, you know, are guinea pigs for testing Windows updates.
Yeah.
It does seem like they have been left behind a lot of the times. And the other, this is a little, we'll get to this maybe a little bit later. There's some other stuff going on with the home SKU, which I think is
important. Yeah, I want to get to that. Me too.
Yeah, it's important on a number of levels, right? Because, we often think or worry about Microsoft leaving the consumer market, right? And I think the home SKU speaks very specifically to the consumer market, to end users who would walk into a Best Buy and buy a computer. But it also speaks to kind of higher end consumer things, like gaming, especially, where all of a sudden they're turning home into something that is not just more applicable, but is in fact going to be the go to choice.
Right. So when you published all this information. So here's what happened, by the way, little funny backstory. So Paul dumped all this information on a Saturday morning. Like, I was sitting there eating breakfast, looking at my Twitter account, and all of a sudden I'm like seeing all these articles start popping up, and I'm like, where is this coming from? What?
Guess who? That's funny.
I know. And so then I'm like, okay, I need to take a shower and think about this. So I went, thought about it in the shower, came back out, and I'm like, you know what the biggest thing in this whole thing is to me? It's what they're doing with home.
The home thing. Yeah. I later wrote a separate article about this for the same reason. The more I thought about it, I agree with that.
Yeah. Because right now, what do we have in the lineup? We have Windows 10 Home. That's all we have, right? That is the only edition of Windows 10 for home consumers. Like, I mean, a lot of, like, we were talking about this last week, a lot of businessy type PCs ship with Windows 10 Home right now. That's what it comes installed with. So what Microsoft's doing, it seems, from what you guys wrote, is they're going to go to the OEMs and say, guys, there's not just going to be one edition of Windows 10 Home. There's going to be this Windows 10 Home in S mode, which will give to you well, we won't give it to you. We'll charge you way less if you put that on a machine. Then there's Windows 10 Home as we have it now. Then there is going to be this Windows 10 Home Advanced Edition that is going to be
so
more expensive.
The question, though, is more expensive to PC makers, right?
So PC makers, right.
This one is actually not clear. We know that today with Windows 10 Pro for workstations, that cost is given to the user, right? You as a user, you buy a 16-core something and you want these capabilities. You can upgrade in the Windows Store and get that. I looked again and again and again to try to understand how this was going to apply, because the pricing information is for PC makers.
Right.
And by the way, we don't get that data a lot. That alone makes this documentation kind of incredible, because we never really see what the actual price of Windows is.
Right.
And we see it here, and it's very interesting. We can talk about it. It is not clear to me that a user could go to the Windows Store, mm-hmm. the Microsoft Store, and upgrade from Home to Home Advanced, or if Home Advanced mm-hmm. is just a mode,
because you
as a PC maker, because
I remember we were talking on Twitter, because as Paul's publishing all these stories, I'm like saying things to him on Twitter, like, wait, so what is this thing? And what is this thing? Right. And so when you publish a thing about Windows 10 Home Advanced, I said, oh, so Windows 10 Home Advanced is to Windows 10 Home the same way that Windows 10 Pro Workstations is
to Windows
10 Pro. Right.
I should say thematically, right? What we don't know is if it's a separate SKU like Workstation is. It's not clear.
And what are the feature differences? That's something else we don't know, right? Like, what's different
between Windows 10?
Which PCs it can run on, right?
Well, in other words, what it does is it takes advantage of the types of PCs that would have gamers would use, right? Yeah. Not just gamers, but the gamers is the easiest thing to understand. What that means is Siri just kicked in because I use Siri every day. A Core i9 processor. If the system is a Core i9 processor and you're a PC maker, you're going to want to ship this version of Windows or some Pro version, right? Because it will take advantage of that thing. If you have a Core i7 with six or more cores also, it can take advantage of that. Or Threadripper, the AMD equivalent.
Yeah.
And I don't have it here in my notes, but there's another instance. I believe if it is a machine that has more than I think it's any Core i whatever processor with more than 16 gigs of RAM, if I'm not mistaken. That one's off the top of my head. Also, would require essentially advanced Home Advanced to take advantage of that hardware.
Yeah.
So the question is,
like Windows 10 Pro for workstations. That's how they do it too. Yeah.
It's exactly right. So it's easy to look at this and say, well, as a PC maker, you would ship a gaming PC. It would meet these requirements. Mm-hmm. You would ship Home Advanced. It is specifically targeting that market, by the way.
I don't even think it's like you would. I think you will have to.
I do too.
Yeah.
But it begs the question, though, people can build these computers. So.
Right. What about system
if
builders?
As an individual building a gaming PC, like I did a year ago, and I think Brad is doing right now, I don't know what he's doing, but you might want this
thing. I know what
he's
doing.
There he is. or you might need this thing, right? So
yeah,
the choice today is you would typically, a gamer today would get Windows 10 Pro.
Right.
In the near future, you might say, well, maybe they would need the workstation SKU because that's, even though honestly, it's not really targeting that market. This kind of opens up Home as either a SKU or a family of SKUs, which hopefully the former, not the latter. To brand new capabilities. And it's also tied into a broader strategy at Microsoft when I talked about that transition year. Actually, the core of this is not so much about Windows 10S. It's about Microsoft looking at what has worked in the PC industry over the past couple of years. Because the PC sales have fallen for six straight years. There have been sub-markets within the industry that have done well. And there's two of them, gaming PCs and then non-gaming premium PCs. Mm-hmm. Let's apply that marketing push, that success, the strategy, and bring it down to the volume part of the market, which is low-end and mid-range computers. And that's what this is about. In other words, let's make all of these things compelling across the board. I think S mode is a way to bring what used to be Windows 10S to computers that can compete with Chromebooks in any situation, right? Not just in the educational market. And I think Windows 10 Home Advanced is a way to make Windows a no-brainer for gaming PCs, which it kind of already is, obviously, but now focus more on the consumer SKU, not on what used to be essentially the business SKU.
But you know, but what I'm interested in is with Windows 10 Pro for workstations, there are some features that Microsoft stopped putting in Pro and only is putting in that SKU now, right? So, for example, the ReFS, the file system, right? You have to get Pro Workstation to get that. What are they going to do with Home? That's what I wonder. Like, is there going to be any feature in Home that is not in the base Home SKU, but it is in Advanced Home?
I didn't see any evidence of that. I believe it's just the core, the processor RAM combinations that I mentioned earlier. And I and for that reason, I agree. I think it's this is going to be basically a requirement. If you're shipping a PC like this, you're going to need Home Advanced. The rationale behind that is it costs more, right? You can get like basic Home on a low end 4 gig computer with 32 gigs of storage or less, small screens. It's going to cost next to nothing. But if you get if you build one of these computers with a Core i9 processor, a six core Core i7, you're gonna have to pay about four times as much because that computer's much more powerful.
One reader asked me, and I thought this was a hilarious question, but no way it's not. He said, "Hey, if we get the Home Advanced SKU, does that mean we won't have to take the upgrades automatically from Windows going forward?" I'm like, "Yeah,
that's a good question."
But
I don't know anything about that.
I know we don't.
That would be nice.
I know. Yeah. So I don't know. I thought that was really the to me of all the parts of the, and there were so many parts of this that was the most interesting. I'm like, oh, so they're looking.
Yeah.
So. And you understand why they're doing it. Like you just said, Microsoft's going to get more money by doing this, right? So instead of having people building these expensive, high-end, mostly gaming-type rigs with Windows 10 Home, now they're going to get more money out of them per copy of Windows pre-installed on those machines.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I get why they're doing it. Makes sense for them.
It's a lot of information. It's kind of hard to understand. Like you mentioned REFS or whatever, right? This is the Windows 8 era file system that the Synofsky guys kind of came in with, and it was going to be everywhere, and then it's kind of departed, you know. I'm sure they still use it on server, whatever. So now it's available only on the workstation SKU. Fine. Mm-hmm. Okay, whatever. I don't believe that's coming to Home Advanced, by the way. I don't think that makes any sense for that particular product. But, you know, they've always had kind of an artificial line dividing each of these SKUs, and it is going to be interesting to see whether it's literally – because the way these things kind of stack up, it's really based on the capabilities of the computers, and it's a tiered pricing model. My hope, and I half think that Windows 10 Home Advanced is not going to be an extra SKU in the sense that I sort of think to the end user what they're going to see is just Windows 10 Home. And it will just expose the capabilities of the computer they have. And that what they won't understand is that the PC maker may have paid a little bit more depending on the capabilities of that computer.
I think the opposite is going to happen, though. Just because they did that with Windows 10 Pro for workstations. So I'm like, they're probably going to do Home Advanced, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
But maybe not. That's one of the things we don't
hoping,
know.
You know.
I know.
Just keep hoping.
We call you a pessimist on this show, but you're actually an optimist.
Well, I have realistic expectations, but high hopes. I think is the way I would say it.
There's one other thing that you guys wrote about that I would like to talk about, but I should have gotten my gong out before, but I don't have it handy right now. But there was a mention in this document about Microsoft says 60% of users.
I wasn't even going to bring this up. I was literally going to let this one go, but you had to bring it up.
60% of users stay on Windows 10S. Only 40% currently are upgrading to Pro. And they said this is on third-party devices running Windows 10S. If they do upgrade to Pro, they do this. 60% of them do this in the first 24 hours. So I know you said this is like a laugh, but you know what? I think these numbers are real.
If you include Surface laptop, it'd be completely the opposite.
It doesn't though, right?
Exactly.
For obvious reasons.
So I have two points to this, and you might want to grab your gun. This is the part where I said they literally provide no information about their own computer that runs this system, Surface laptop. It is to this day the only mainstream PC that ships with Windows 10S. When they announced this computer, Terry Myerson said he fully expected to see several premium PCs from third-party PC makers in market by the end of last year. Obviously, that's never happened.
Yep.
Like I said earlier, I believe that the conversion rate to Windows 10 Pro on that system is 99.something%. It's got to be as close to 100% as something could be.
And I think it's about 50.
Okay.
but you know. Here's why. Like, this came up when people started arguing about this on Twitter over the weekend. This was the stat that got people like riled, right? And the reason I think this is a high number is where did they ship third-party devices running Windows 10S? First-line workers.
In education.
And education. Who controls if you are allowed to upgrade on those devices? An administrator.
That's right. So here's the problem.
Yeah.
But this is why I feel that these numbers are real, like you say. In other words, field of these devices, I don't think they're lying. I think these are real. No. I will absolutely admit to that. But the number of these machines is so small, it doesn't matter. And what I mean by that is when they announced the computers that were 279 last summer that were going to run in education, and then again this past month, when they were at BET and they announced another round of computers from some other companies like Lenovo, which will also start at 279. The one thing they didn't tell anybody was those computers don't actually come with Windows 10S. Those computers come with your choice of Windows 10S or Windows 10 Pro. That's how they're presented to education. You don't have to get them with S and an upgrade. You have a choice. I don't think anyone is choosing S. And again, I don't mean this literally, but statistically or, you know, whatever, however you want to say it, I believe that the vast majority, if not all of those computers, are in fact going out the door with Windows 10 Pro. And then there's the first-line workers. Okay. First-line workers also, or front-line or whatever they are. I just don't think there are any of those either. I don't think they've sold any of these with Windows 10S.
They probably haven't sold many of these. I agree with you. But I think a lot of times and I'm going to take myself out, most of us who are in the tech press aren't normal users. And so we don't think like that. Like, we're just like, of course you would upgrade to the better operating system, right? Of course you would. Why wouldn't you, right?
Uh-huh.
I'll tell you, every single PC I have ever bought, ever, I have never upgraded the operating system. I know how.
By the way,
shocking.
I could.
No, hold on a second.
What kind of user are you? Windows way.
It is.
No, she's right. By the way, you're right. You're absolutely right. For a normal human being, and I don't mean some subset of humanity. I mean for most people, period.
Right.
Upgrading an operating system. Well, I'm sorry. Upgrading Windows is about as normal of a thing to do as jumping out of an airplane. It just doesn't feel right. I think it makes most people nervous. They would rather not do it. Right. I completely agree with that. That said, Windows 10, Surface Laptop in particular, has not emerged as the mainstream runaway bestseller that I thought it was going to be. In fact, curiously, this year it's been outsold by the new Surface Pro by, I think the factor was 3-1 or 4-1 or whatever the figure is. But it has not emerged as this big success thing like I thought it was going to be. I really, really, really thought this was going to be a mainstream success for Microsoft. Microsoft remains a boutique PC maker. The types of people that go into a Microsoft store and buy a Surface Laptop or would go to Microsoft.com or whatever and buy a Surface Laptop are not normal people. they are people like me. They're people who are Microsoft fans. They're people who are seeking this thing out and they know exactly what they're getting. So I agree with you. I just think all of these in that most people don't do that upgrade normally. But I don't think that the audience for that or the audience for these third-party devices that were running S out of the box is a meaningful size to matter. So that these statistics are just meaningless.
I agree. I agree on that. But they also, I got to say, the stats did not surprise me. Like, I saw other people going, that's totally impossible. Nope, that's a lie. And I'm like,
you would have heard me say, what? At the top of my life. Like, when I saw that, I was like, there is no.
You know what's interesting to me is the complete opposite of Mac users and Windows users. Because Mac users routinely and almost uniformly upgrade every year their operating system. And Windows users buy a new computer when it's time to upgrade.
Yeah, I can explain this.
But wait, before that, I think in the new world, especially in this last version of Windows world, Microsoft wants its users to do what Apple users do for security reasons and other reasons, right?
Mm-hmm. They have all kinds of great reasons.
They've got to train their users to get more like Apple users.
That's right. No, you're right. And the reason that Windows users historically have not upgraded to new versions of Windows when they came out is the same reason that Mac users have, which is that we all are the sum of our experiences. And if you have a consistently bad experience doing anything, you will stop doing that thing. And if you have a consistently good experience doing something, you will just keep doing it. And Microsoft has made great strides with upgrades. And now in this Windows as a Service world, even though I think that the system is broken, I will at least give them credit to say, actually, upgrading from one version of Windows 10 to another is not typically an earth-shattering experience for most people. It's the success rate is actually really high. The problem is most normal people don't know that. So it's like I've touched the hot stove a number of times. I'm done touching the stove. I've heard you tell me that the stove is now fixed and it will not burn me when I touch it. But I have been burned, and I'm going to go with what's been working for me. I'm not going to touch it.
And there's also no reason to upgrade. Like when people see me running Windows 10 Home, they're like, "Wow, why are you running Home?" I'm like, "Well, why do I need to run Pro?"
Yeah, I mean, you know, the simpler mobile systems like Android and iOS, those things, I don't think people even worry about that.
I would call that a cross grade. And this is something that can't happen in the Mac world because there aren't multiple SKUs of Mac OS. Mm. But that's a cross grade. When I say upgrade, I'm thinking to the next version
to the next
of
version.
What you have.
Oh, well, I mean, you mean twice like from 7 to 10?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, but Microsoft is, you know, they're kind of gaming the system here, right? So Windows 10 version 1703, and then you go to Windows 10 version 1709. That is that thing. It is. They could have called it Windows 11, Windows 12, Windows 13. Those are all new versions of Windows. They call them feature updates, but that is, in fact, you're installing a new version of the operating system. Hmm. And I by the way, the thing that Leo said earlier about Microsoft wanting to get that system is not only correct, but that's why these things are branded this way. They don't want you to know that you're doing what you're doing.
It's not a Windows upgrade. You're just patching it.
Right.
Yeah,
if you told me, you got to upgrade from 11 to 12, I'd be like, nah, I don't need to, right?
Would freak out. Yep.
Yeah.
No, but it's like, oh, that's exactly why they do it.
Spring Creators Update. Oh, okay. Why not? It's just
I'm not being cynical about this either.
No, I know.
As Leo mentioned, there are very good reasons for those upgrades. It's a feature upgrade, but every one of these feature upgrades comes with major security advances and so forth. I mean, there's really good reasons to do it.
No, it's true. It's true.
And you can make the argument if the process is it's never going to be foolproof, but compared to how it used to be, it's night and day. It's not even comparable. Yeah. Your risk is very low.
Yeah.
For the most part.
Agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was a great treasure trove of info that these guys like just dumped on us on a Saturday. Thanks, Paul.
So let's talk about how much Windows really costs. I find this to be fascinating.
All right.
I'll just give you some rough numbers. This is kind of interesting to me.
These are numbers of how much it costs to OEMs.
Always wanted to know this, right? It was always assumed, $50 or whatever, but.
Right. It varies by market, right? And so if let me go to Homer. I think the Home one is probably the most not the most interesting. It's the simplest because actually licensing gets really complicated in the commercial side because you could add in things like downgrade rights. For example, any given SKU of Windows 10 Pro or whatever, Windows 10 Enterprise maybe, you could just license that thing for a certain kind of computer at a certain cost. But if you want to license it and have downgrade rights, and probably to install with this equivalent Windows 7 version, you actually pay extra for that. That's smart. And they've probably always done that, but it's interesting.
Yeah, they have.
So Windows 10 Home runs from $25 to $101, depending on the capabilities of the computer. And so the very cheapest version, which is, again, a computer with an Atom, Celeron, or Pentium processor, 4 gigs of RAM or less, 32 gigs of storage or less, and then small screen sizes. I think it's 7.9. I don't remember the exact screen sizes. That's $25. And the interesting thing there is that you can get that in S mode or not in S mode for the same price. There's no additional cost for not being in S mode, and that I think is tied to the fact that you as the end user can upgrade from S mode to non S mode for no cost. And then, kind of tears up from there. And so that, remember where I was talking about the advanced either SKU or mode or whatever it might be, which is a Core i9 processor, six-core Core i7 and so forth, will cost up to $101, depending on the exact class of the computer and what the capabilities are. And then on the commercial and education markets, which are the same, essentially education is commercial from a licensing perspective, it ranges from, crazily, from $10 for small tablets and entry-level PCs with Atom Celeron processors, et cetera, to about $117 wow. for a mid-range
I'm core computer. I'm amazed that it gets up above $100, frankly.
Yeah. Yeah. You could pay, by the way, for Windows 10 Pro in workstation mode or Windows 10 Pro workstation, you could pay up to $244.
Whoa. Now, is the OEM. Mm-hmm. So it means the customer, typically an OEM cost, you double at least for the customer cost.
Well, right? but think about the computer that they're buying. Right. So you don't really, I don't know how you would think of this, but you got to think
as workstation class. As a percentage of the overall cost of the computer, I understand that that's reasonable.
We could be talking about an 8, 12 core, whatever, something, dual processor, dual graphics cards. It's designed for engineering tasks, whatever it is. This computer could cost $5, $10,000. It could be any price. So $244, it's like whatever.
I mean. No.
It's
$88 for the consumer.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And it's also up to the OEM how much they want to pass on to the consumer.
Right.
Right.
Yes, that's for sure.
But we always hear if it's a 10-cent part, oh no, the 10-cent part, that's going to really raise the cost of the computer because of markup or whatever OEM.
Yeah. Right.
Well, but okay.
But with Windows 10 Pro for workstations, for example, I wrote this piece late last year because Microsoft had told OEMs they were going to jack the price way up when they came out with Windows 10 Pro for workstations. So
did they
some
use that
OEMs,
exact phrase?
Yeah, we're going to just a little heads up here.
The slide actually said jack the price up.
Well, here's what the OEMs did, which was interesting. The OEMs started telling their customers, right? So they started telling enterprises, hey, Microsoft's doing this. And then customers were forwarding me these emails, right? And they were like, hey, did you know Microsoft's going to do this? And like, we're going to get caught in the middle here. So I wrote about it last fall. And I'm like, hey, Microsoft's about to increase the price of this to OEMs. And they're going to pass it on to you.
Right, because there's not a lot of margin in a modern PC. I mean, they've got to.
Right.
Well, by the way, so I don't want, tiered pricing, this part of me, it thinks, you almost wish for a flat tax in some ways just to make it simple.
Like a percent of the purchase price. But, this is where Apple has a huge advantage because they're a hardware manufacturer. Yep. They don't have to have multiple SKUs. I mean, this explains why there's multiple SKUs, right?
It does.
That's
right.
Windows.
It does.
The thing I hope for, and I again, there's no precedent for this, but I do hope for it, is that I don't mind the cost being pushed along to the consumer. That makes sense. You're buying a higher end PC. It's going to be more money, whatever. You probably never would even
know
or have any
consumers know about the Microsoft tax.
But I hope that the complexity of this is not passed along to the computer, because part of Microsoft's strategy this year, part of this transition, is they've really kind of divided the market into these different categories. And so it's a little more complicated than low end, medium, high end, and whatever. There's like 8 or 9 of these categories.
You know what Chris Capicella would say here? We didn't mean to tell anybody, Paul. You told everybody.
Exactly.
It's a secret.
Well, no. What I'm asking, I guess what I'm wondering is, I hope
people wouldn't even know if it weren't for you, Paul.
Okay. I see how this conversation has changed and how I am.
No, we're very grateful.
And how the hunter has become the hunted.
Shoot the messenger.
Exactly.
No, but I understand that the numbers that I'm citing are aimed at OEMs, PC makers, right? I get that.
They're not for consumers.
What I don't like to see is the complexity of this passed on to the consumer. In other words, I don't care that the price is it's fair. It seems to me, it doesn't matter if $105 whatever the price is fair. I mean, it's fair that as the price goes up, those prices get passed along to the buyer of that computer, right? But the issue with Windows has always been one of the million issues with Windows has always been that the price of Windows is a huge percentage of the price of any given computer, right? Mm-hmm. And as things like netbooks back in the day that were running Linux have come into the market, or today would be Chromebooks, they don't tend to line up very well price-wise. Yeah. That's been the that's a problem, right? There are other problems, you know, complexity and so forth. But let's look looking just at the price. If you say like this computer over here is $179 and this computer over here is $279 and the one that's more expensive is running Windows, part of the reason that thing is more expensive is because it's running Windows, you know, and they're paying for that. And so there's it looks like, and again, I don't know what to compare this to. I don't have figures like this for, you know, every version of Windows or every year going back in history, but it seems like lower end versions are a lot less expensive and will help make this equation make some more sense. You know, the idea is we're going to be able to do this very soon, and this is just education market, but the Lenovo education PCs that were announced at BET are going to be available as Chromebooks too.
Oh,
right?
Wow.
And so we're going to be able to make a comparison there, not just in how those things perform and work, but in how they're priced as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess what I'm saying, I'm sorry, I kind of walked around this, but I hope that no consumer ever has to deal with the complexity of this pricing structure. That this what's not changing is that you're just buying a computer and you don't have to worry about this stuff.
You know what? The complexity they're going to have to deal with, though, is and this. So Microsoft, it seems to me, doing this to make the OEMs happy. So the OEMs have a broader range of price points, so they can offer a 10S, in effect, a 10S computer. Microsoft will take the extra $50 and make it a pro computer. But from the OEM's point of view, oh, no, we made, now it's a cheaper PC. That looks good in our ad. The problem is it is for the consumer more complex. Not, and it's not about price. It's about, well, what Windows am I getting?
Right. Which version is on there?
Yeah.
And by the way, which Windows capabilities am I getting too? Precisely. Because that's another part of this.
And it seems to me a few years ago, Microsoft said, we have too many SKUs. We're going to simplify Windows. And now they're going back, right?
Microsoft is a sine curve. Okay. So everything they do comes back again. Like it's, they kind of go back and forth. And,
you know what they'll say? You know what they'll say? Remember when they introduced Windows 10, they said, there's only two SKUs. There's Home and Pro. That's what they said, even though they were actually like 10.
They don't want customers to
think about
it. No, they
were just trying to simplify it, right? They're like, all you have to know is there's Home and Pro.
OEMs can handle it. They don't want, but customers shouldn't have to.
We need to see what this looks
like in the real
world.
Now customers are going to be confused because they're going to get a computer that doesn't run Chrome. And they're going to say, wait a minute. And
it's, well, it's, even, it's worse than that.
More? Wait a minute.
That's just S mode. I mean, there's another whole set of capabilities that go beyond that. There are these kind of hero capabilities that are built into Windows 10.
That's the phrase Microsoft's using, hero PC. Yeah.
Tell me about that. For example, Windows Hello, right? So if you want to get a laptop that has a Windows Hello IR camera in it, historically, that thing has been a high-end computer because that component has been kind of expensive.
Hello's the hero.
There's a bunch of other things like they list Cortana.
Inking too.
Inking.
Inking. Near-field communication capabilities for Cortana. You know, the notion that your computer could be sitting over at the other side of the room and you could say something and you could be playing music. It would still work, whatever.
Boy, those things show up in the ads and then people get the computer home.
Yeah.
That's the kind of complexity consumers.
There's a, some serious complexity there. And the problem is when you look at that range of computers, like I said, it's not low end, mid range, high end. There's like nine of them. Those features kind of filter down into the different things. Mm-hmm. So even within Pro or Home or whatever, you could buy like what they call like a value computer, which is not quite the lowest end computer, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And you're not going to get that stuff, you know? And so you paid less for the version of Windows that came on that computer. You don't really know that, but you did. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's not that it's not built into the code. It's in there. It's just that you don't have the capability to take advantage of it.
Even I get burnt by this. We spent a long time, I talked about this last week, fumfering on the radio show because I didn't understand that Home didn't have the ability to defer updates. And Pro did, and I didn't know which of my machines were Home and which were Pro. Mm. And I had differing abilities, and I was massively confused by that. And this is going to be multiplied now.
So I know they've also talked to OEMs in the past about putting logos representing these different hero capabilities on boxes, right? So if something has Cortana, it'll have the Cortana symbol. If it has Hello, it'll have the little smiley face. So that could help make it a little less complex for somebody who's in the market for a new PC. You know, that they're like, okay, this one has a little smiley face. This one doesn't have a little smiley face.
I can just tell you, as somebody who talks to customers all the time on the radio show, which is the low-end show,
Right.
This is baffling.
It's confusing.
People. It's not what they want, yeah. and it'll drive them to a Mac because Apple doesn't have differing capabilities.
That's right. By the way, this you could extrapolate this to the entire Microsoft stack. I'm writing an article now about Office 365 versus G Suite. And one of the things I keep coming back to is, of course, Microsoft stuff is more powerful. Of course it is. Of course, it's also more complex. Of course, it's really popular with big, slow-moving businesses that are never going to innovate anything. The problem, and by the way, it's from a revenue perspective, it's approximately 10 times the size of G Suite right now. And so you could look at this situation and say, obviously, they're winning. And the answer is, yeah, they are. But the problem is, it's not simple, and it's not super inexpensive. Yeah. And I think that drives people away.
Well, that's
I think that's what happens ultimately. It starts in education in that case. Yeah. But, you just want to buy a computer, and you just want it to work. I mean,
we've kind of worked backwards to Apple's business model. We'll decide everything. And because choice is equals complexity.
Hmm.
And we'll tell you how it's supposed to work.
There are too many bottles of dressing in the supermarket, I'm just going to go to the place that has one.
I think real people don't want that much choice. I know when they ask me a question, they don't want me to say, well, there's three different ways you could do this. They want me to tell them the way to do it.
Well, that's what I meant earlier when I said, you know, I'm worried that this complexity is going to make its way down to the consumer.
In that sense, it will. And it's worse. It is. It's not about price.
Because I don't know how you communicate this. I don't know how you communicate this.
Well, one way they could do it, just thinking aloud, is, you know, if you go to the Microsoft Store website right now, you know, they have that help me choose the PC thing. Have you seen that whatever that is?
You shouldn't have a decision tree. To choose your computer.
What we offer is really complex. We could help.
I know. So, it's not simple. I mean, I remember when I was in the market for my PC not that long ago, I was like, I can't decide. There's too many choices and I can't figure out what I need.
And you're a sophisticated user.
I know. I like having choice. I agree that it's fun to have choice and it's great to have choice. And it does make things more complex. I guess the only thing that's kind of saving Microsoft here is Apple is still more expensive. May keep people in the fold.
Apple seems to have ignored their Mac product line largely for quite a while, especially for consumers.
No, there's an opportunity for Microsoft, but that's the point.
You actually can't fix this. I mean, think about it. In the smartphone world, there are tiers of devices. Of course there are. There are high-end processors, low-end processors, more RAM, less RAM, more storage, whatever. Yeah. But that's simple comparatively, right?
Yeah, people understand that. They get that.
Yeah.
But if you tell them, camera can do hello, but that camera can't, good luck explaining that.
And then add the
But I saw the ad that said you just look at your computer and it recognizes you.
Right.
Wait a minute. This doesn't...
It used to be, remember Microsoft used to have, I forget what they call it. It was a number that measured the performance of your computer.
Yeah. Remember that?
Yeah.
Right? And I think the point of that was they were kind of hoping...
6.5.
You could put this number on a box and someone would walk up and understood what it meant. And they got rid of it really quickly because they understood this thing was not scalable. But it started with Vista. This was the beginning of My Computer Can or Cannot Run Aero Glass was the first step toward this horrible future we're now living in, you know. And the computer, by nature of the complexity and sheer range of capabilities of the device, there's all these different things you can do with it, you know.
Yeah.
And they're starting to tier the product and the pricing to match.
Now, enthusiasts are the exact opposite. They want choice and they can understand choice. In fact, they revel in it. They're the ones who, say, well, you need a Z-axis on your camera. And by the way, is that DDR3 RAM? Come on.
Really? You're still on 3?
So they revel in that. And maybe that's Microsoft just saying, look, that's the market for us. That's where we want to be businesses.
Unfortunately,
I don't think it is.
No.
It's not the market for them. That's the problem.
Well,
it's a market, but it's not the big part of the market.
Yeah. It's certainly the high margin part of the market.
Yeah.
Yes. But again, you know, I think the point, it's funny because the point of this plan literally is to take what made that part of the market successful and apply it to these other markets. You know, they need to drive volume, not just a subset of the market, which is not the volume part of the market. Of course, it's hard to take something that's high margin and apply that success to something that's not. And I think that's why we see this tiered pricing model I don't know. I wish I knew. You know, maybe someone could show me a chart where they would say, Paul, you know, when Windows 7 came out, the chart for the pricing was exactly the same. You're complaining about nothing. But it seems like this has gotten very complex to me.
I think on the OEM side, it's always been like this. I don't think this, like the tiering is new.
But OEMs can handle it.
Yeah. I mean, and I think they like having more options, right?
Well, yeah, because look at Lenovo. If you go to Lenovo and buy, you got the X, you got the T.
They can zero in more on like the exact market that they want to target
That's another kind of complexity that I disagree with. I think there are too many of these things. It's just like I use BMW because I happen to know the car lines very well. But BMW used to be very simple. It was three series, five series, and seven series, and that was pretty much it. There was they would do a six occasionally or whatever, but that was the car line. And now they I couldn't explain it if we had 2 hours. The shared number of models and weird differences and different kinds of M class cars they have. Some of them are not real M's and some of them are real. I mean, it's ludicrous. And that's what PC makers have done. That's what Microsoft is doing to match. I mean, the whole thing is it's an explosion of choice. And it just creates confusion.
People say, I want an all-in-one from HP. And I say, well, yeah, there's definitely a difference between the HP Pavilion all-in-one and the HP Envy all-in-one. And it's like, oh, but they look the same. No, no. Oh, there's also just an HP anything all in one.
Sure. I don't even know what that is. By the way, you haven't even broached the commercial side. You might want one of the business class devices.
That's
because
true.
You know, you can pull the screen off and replace it with a different screen.
Part of it is I have a little bit of a vested interest in this because I have to talk about this stuff on the radio. It's confusing.
Yeah, it's a wonder we're not all insane people, by the way.
I know.
If you talk to enthusiasts, it's fine. It's easy. Because you just, but you talk to regular people, they just... It's hard for them, and I sympathize. Can we just take a little break because we're getting behind on the most important part of the show,
it's just such a big topic.
No, you got a hell of a scoop, I think it's fascinating, frankly, and it's a little peek behind the kimono.
Brad is the one who originally obtained this information.
Just want to let you know, I got
credits a little fireman where it's due there.
You're taking all the credit, but really, I'm the one who found the documents in the back.
He would be the first to let you know that.
It was a fire engine, and I I just had to. I leapt into the flames, and I pulled out the fire the documents.
People listening to audio have no idea.
No.
I think they're getting the gist of it.
Maybe they are, yeah. Brad doesn't talk like that. I'm sorry, Brad. Our show today brought to you by IT Pro TV, the fun, engaging, entertainment way to get a job in IT, get the certs that you need to get the job, or to keep your job in IT and get a better one, get better pay, polish your skills. One of the reasons I think we like IT as a profession is because you're always learning. You're always growing, right? I mean, that's part of the fun of it. It's not like you've mastered it. You never get to the point where you go, oh, yeah, I got this. There's always something new. And that's fun. Plus, there's always new opportunities, new job opportunities. Because, well, for instance, 1 million unfilled positions in 2017, 1 million for computer security professionals. I talked to a guy yesterday. This was actually great. He said, yeah, I've been listening to you for 5 years. I started listening in college. I listen to Security Now, listen to Windows Weekly. I was bored with computer science. I listened to you. I got into IT security, got job offers from the CIA and the FBI, turned them down because government jobs were about one-third what the commercial sector was. It was actually good. Lisa said, well, that's fine. Work in the commercial sector. But then you can give back when, when you're close to retirement, you can give back and go work for the public sector, give back a little bit. He said, oh, yeah, that's a great idea. Great guy. Loves his job. Loves what he's doing and is always learning. That's the point of IT Pro TV. Sharpen your IT skills. And if you run an IT team, empower your team with IT Pro TV. So the way they do it is kind of like us. In fact, they were inspired by Twit. They have a basically internet television station. But unlike us, they have 5 studios. They do 125 hours of content live every week. They're on the East Coast, so it's Monday through Friday Eastern, 9 to 5. And you can watch it. They have a chat room just like us. You can chat with the hosts. It's very engaging, very fun. And then, of course, everything live goes on demand. So you can, there's more than 3,300 hours now of binge-worthy content there in every aspect. They make it very easy to watch. Of course, they have, you can do it on your PC, but they have Chromecast app. They have an Android app. They have an iOS app. They've got a Roku, Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV apps. So it's very, and they're great apps too. So it's very easy to watch. Watch on your big screen when you're having breakfast. Get in the car, listen on your Android device as you're driving to work. Have it running in the background as you're working on your PC. And by osmosis, you're just going to absorb all this content. The courses they're working on right now, version 9 of the Certified Ethical Hacker cert. That's so much fun. It's just a great one to have. Yeah, I'm a certified ethical hacker. What about it? By the way, that's what this guy was yesterday. He was a white hat. He created offensive exploits for, well, I won't say who. CISA, SQL Server. I guess I have to respect some confidences. SQL Server 2016. This week they're doing Azure 7533. I don't, maybe Mary Jo knows what that means. I don't know what that means. CC, what is 7533? Is that a version?
I don't
version?
Know. I was like, what is that?
Yeah, must have to do with the cert. I don't know. CCNA Security. If you just want to be, you know, basic fix-it guy, that A-plus cert really helps you get a job in IT, in service. CompTIA is A-plus. They're doing all of that this week, and they have all the other certs, too. If you get the team portal, you can track your team's results and really prove the ROI to the boss on your training spend, because they have this IT Pro TV Supervisor portal. Complete control over your team's training schedule. You can create custom groups and training assignments, view logins, viewing time, video downloads, course completion tracking. You can see how any individual is doing, how the group is doing as a whole. The team solution has group pricing too and is great. We met a guy named James Packer. He's a IT Pro TV member. He used it for not only training himself, but for his team. And now he's got recruited to a job, this is his quote, in a literal tropical paradise. The world needs IT professionals. They're waiting for you. If you want to know more about IT Pro TV for individuals or teams, in fact, you can get a free team trial at the and including their supervisor portal. Right now, everybody, go to itpro.tv/ww for Windows Weekly. itpro.tv/ww. You can also sign up for an individual monthly membership and a free 7-day trial. But you got to use the code WW30. So one more time, itpro.tv/ww, and the offer code is WW30 for 30% off your subscription for the lifetime of your active subscription. They've upped the numbers. It's now 90,000 IT Pro TV members. And I think I take credit for a few of those. Premium subscriptions include unlimited Transcender practice exams and virtual labs. Normally $857 a year with this offer code, $600. That's $50 a month for this unbelievable training. The practice exams alone are $100. itpro.tv/ww. Don't forget that code, WW30. Flexible training, binge-worthy content, proven ROI. It's IT Pro TV. itpro.tv/ww, and that code is WW30. Back to Windows Weekly we go, and I am actually really... Are you done with your scoop, Paul? I mean...
Yeah, I think that's pretty much most of it, isn't
it? Talked about everything you know?
Yeah, I think so.
Let's move on then to the very, to me, very exciting shift from UWP to PWA. It's kind of an alphabetic miracle.
Sure.
No, actually, I am excited about this.
Yeah.
Progressive web apps for Windows 10 are really finally happening.
I know. So Paul told us this. Remember, he had the guys talk to him all about this. So it's really happening. Exactly what they told him is happening.
So what is happening?
Windows 10 Redstone 4 coming out this spring is going to have all the pieces in place for the foundation for Microsoft to be able to support progressive web apps.
This is so exciting for developers.
I know. Yeah. So here's what we didn't know, or I didn't know this anyway. They've been out there for the past year crawling the web using Bing Crawler, and they're identifying PWAs that might be good, they think, for
really?
Windows 10.
Interesting.
Yep. And they've looked at 1.5 million potential candidates, and they've created a small subset that they are going to put in the Windows Store. So they are going to proactively go and put these in the store. So there will be some in the store already. And they're telling developers now, you can get ready to submit your own progressive web apps. Also, we've got this tool called the PWA Builder tool. I think it used to be called Manifold JS. I think that's the same thing. That will let you package up your progressive web app like an AppX and also get that into the store. So it's really going to happen. It's not just like, oh, the support will be there, and in, you know, 10 more months, you'll start seeing them come in. No, I think they're going to be in there like from the get-go. There's going to be some. So here they come. Progressive web apps in the Windows Store.
This, to me, reminds me of the move to Ajax, using Ajax on websites, mm-hmm. where suddenly everybody was doing it. We had a guy in the other day who teaches Angular. Yeah, in fact, he has a boot camp for Angular, which is a JavaScript framework, which is one of many that can be used to make PWAs. And I'm kind of really thinking, if I were, I might just do it for fun. But if I were a younger guy, man, I would learn this.
This would be, you want to focus on JavaScript and you want to learn this stuff.
HTML5, JavaScript.
So this is the biggest thing that's ever happened, I think, in apps, period. And the reason is this stuff will be literally universal, right? Apple revealed, they never kind of announced it, but in the release notes, I think, for the 11.3 developer preview, Safari will support PWA technology in the next version of their platform as well. So this is something you're going to be able to, these apps are going to target iOS, Mac, Android, Chrome, and Windows 10.
You develop one app, it's basically a web app.
Yep.
But because of service workers on the various platforms, it downloads and turns into an app, and it's completely cross-platform.
Right. Amazing. It could have, you know, they're kind of described as native-ish, but and that probably brings up bad memories of Java. I do sort of think that PWA is, you know, 20 years later, Java done right. It's the Java as we kind of hoped Java would be. But yeah, it's...
And it's not Electron, which is a kind of... Right. A bad word these days because Electron is so heavy. Adobe Air, but Electron kind of brings Google Chrome basically onto every into every app.
No.
This is not heavyweight like that.
No, and this is big. I would say, I'm sorry, on Windows 10 in particular, and for Microsoft in particular, this is huge because the UWP platform, the Windows Store, the Microsoft Store, as we now call it, has not been successful. And Microsoft has done everything they can to get developers to bring their code bases to Windows 10. They've released all those bridges technologies and so forth. But the native app platform just isn't happening. And when you look at, you know, if you're a developer, obviously you're pragmatic. You look at the available platforms. Where are you going to put your stuff? You know, the web is the biggest platform by far. Mobile is humongous, but not just humongous, but also actively engaged with looking for apps and installing apps and using apps and so forth. And then there's kind of Windows, you know, and Windows 10, you know, despite all this kind of push to these modern mobile app platform stuff, we're still very much focused on the desktop apps from the past. You know, we used Photoshop and Office and iTunes and, you know, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And this is going to really bring modern web app technology to Windows in an elegant way for the first time, in a first-class way. It's going to make it discoverable the way that you want it to be discoverable. You can go into the Windows Store if that's how you want to do it and get it that way. Eventually they're talking about doing the install directly from a Bing search result. You know, you can just install from the browser, you know?
Yeah.
So
their blog post this week was kind of funny because they have a whole section where, you know, it's not either or UWP or PWA. And then you go to read that section and they don't make a convincing case for UWP. They basically say, you know, if you're a new developer, you probably are thinking about UWP. And, you know, like, I mean, you're not thinking about UWP. You're thinking about PWA. And if you're somebody who's a cross-platform developer, you're probably thinking about PWA. And, you know, there are some people who still might think they want to do a native app, but
UWP is the Microsoft Store apps, basically, right?
Universal Windows platform, right? So,
and that is not a cross-platform solution.
No. Despite word universal in its title.
It's a cross-Windows 10 platform, right?
There is no version of the story where we can't say that UWP has not failed. It has completely failed. It has just not met the bar. And this is going to save the platform in many ways. It's weird, but by opening up Windows to this truly universal app platform, we're finally going to get first-class apps in the Windows Store. Not that there aren't some in there today. No, I realize there's certainly a handful, right. But
there's even no Microsoft's way that Windows is ever going to. Teams is the quintessential example. One of the most important apps for Microsoft going forward, the Teams client, they're building that as a PWA. It's not even in the store yet.
I'll give you another one of my little ivory tower dreams of the future is, you know, there's been a lot of complaining lately about various aspects of Microsoft's apps strategy. You know, what's going on with Office, right? What we're still building something called Office 2019. Microsoft has pushed web versions of the Office apps. They've pushed mobile versions of the Office apps, right? Yeah. And now they're putting the normal versions of the Office apps in the store. It's like, what are they doing with this thing? Like, they can't use their own app platform to make good versions of their apps. It makes me wonder if this isn't a signal that the reason we're kind of treading water here is because they are working to that future. They've sort of gotten this religion and understood that this is where these things are going. And I think the success of Teams is going to help drive that. It gives them something they can show, not just the folks at Office, obviously, but all around Microsoft. Like, hey, you should be doing this thing. So I can dream. But I really do hope that they take this very seriously because they have lost an incredible amount of time working on these dopey things that have never gone anywhere. And this is their chance to do the one thing that could work well everywhere, not just on their own platform, but on Linux.
That's the new Mac. Microsoft, right? It's everywhere instead of
it fits, know. Right? Yeah. It makes sense.
Credit Satya with that, I think.
Yeah.
Although Alex Gumpel was just telling me that one of the reasons Skype desktop is so god-awful is it's Electron-based. And I would hope that maybe Microsoft would look at that and say, oh, you know, maybe we should make this one a progressive web app as well.
They should.
But are the Skype guys still really totally autonomous? I guess they are. That's why they're doing this.
Well, Skype on the business end is turning into Teams anyway.
Right.
So it begs the question, that is going to be a PWA. So
right.
Why wouldn't the consumer
That's how Microsoft
client?
Leads the way. It eats its own dog food and makes everything it can a PWA. Could Plus you make Office them. A PWA?
That's what they
I'm
told
arguing
you, right?
That they No. What they've said is they've talked to those guys. I mean, Outlook in particular is one. And I use this example all the time because there are like 17 different versions of Outlook, some of which are good, bad, or indifferent. I think they've done some cool stuff on the web, which is convenient because I think that's the thing that should become Outlook. I think we talked about this a week ago or two, this notion that the Windows 10 built-in apps are terrible. This could change that really dramatically.
Yeah, that would be a good start. Good place to start.
It also would help them, right? Because like we said, they're developing their platform. So when they come out with an app like Office, it's everywhere. Yeah. It's on Mac, it's on Android, it's everywhere. And so if you're Microsoft and you have this team building Office, you're like, you know what? We need to build this once instead of have to do it for every platform it all sync.
This will also help the people that have a hard time with this new Microsoft strategy. The people who want the Windows first or Windows better kind of thing. One of the beautiful things about PWAs is that they can take on native capabilities that are specific to different platforms. So on Windows 10, it's possible for a PWA to expose native Windows 10 features that you wouldn't see when you run that app on Android or some other platform. They literally could be better on Windows 10. The other aspect of PWA that's very exciting, and I think we talked about this way back in October or November, whenever I wrote that original article about PWAs, is that Microsoft has pledged to drop native OS features when PWA features catch up or surpass those features, that they will not compete with stuff in PWA. They will simply adopt the thing when it's better.
Do they? I just want to be clear. Electron is not considered PWA, or is it? From their point of view,
I don't believe it is, only because
Teams is in Electron. I've just been looking.
So But so Teams is transitioning to PWA.
Visual Studio is the code editor.
By the way, this is later in the notes, but Microsoft has not officially announced Build, but Build's coming. It's coming in May. And if PWA is not the centerpiece of this entire developer focus that they have at the show, I'm going to be shocked.
Yeah.
Because I really, you know, you talk about a transition year.
Now, what about this the complaints, takes on a bigger, and I'm seeing this in the chat room, mm-hmm. that people will end up back on native apps because of the huge limitations of this kind of development, PWA.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So to the Chicken Littles of the world, I will say.
It's never going to work.
It's never yeah. going to work. It's weird how technology never improves. That's ridiculous. These things don't. It's not a hard stop, right? This is the Windows 10S thing again. We don't just switch to PWA today.
There'll be some native apps, right?
There will always be native apps. It doesn't mean things go away, but things will transition away, and PWA gets more powerful. PWA gets more powerful on Windows 10 specifically. By the way, that, again, I don't know what they're going to announce at Build, but, you know, Windows 10 features exposed through PWA, right? It's like when they make the transition from .NET to .NET Core. The first version doesn't do everything.
Yeah.
I think last week Mary Jo talked about, I think she talked about .NET 2.1. Yeah. One of the features of .NET 2.1 is a Windows-only library that brings back a ton of features from the .NET framework to .NET Core only on Windows, because that's what developers need, right? Mm-hmm. These things, that's how life works. It happens over time. PWA is inevitable. The only question is whether Microsoft can move quick enough to make it matter on Windows. That's the only question. It is happening with or without Microsoft. I'm excited that they're taking these steps. And if you're a developer today, you know, there's the one thing that Microsoft developers will probably agree with, I hope they'll agree with, is that for whatever the changes that have occurred over the years, for whatever the technology side roads we've gone down and then stepped back from, for the .NET stuff and the stuff that built off of .NET, like WPF or actually the UWP stuff, which builds off of whatever it is, Microsoft always provides you with a path forward as well, right? Mm-hmm. So in addition to opening up Windows to these code bases from other platforms, they've always been very cognizant of this base of developers that they have. And that if you're a .NET developer or a Microsoft Stack developer today, they're going to provide you with the tools, technologies, SDKs, whatever it is, to take your skills forward into this new era. You can go take a JavaScript course, please. But I mean, they're going to provide a way for developers to be able to target PWA in a sophisticated manner.
So at this point, of course, the key to making PWA work is the service workers on each platform.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like I didn't realize Apple had committed. I thought Apple was kind of on the fence on all of this, putting this.
What I mean by that is they did not announce. They've not announced anything, right? Of course, their developer show doesn't happen until June.
And they
or
may end up doing something as typical with Apple that's uniquely Apple, as opposed to.
No one knows. I mean, what they've said is that Safari on both platforms is supporting this
service
technology,
workers.
Including
Good.
Service workers. So,
Good.
What we don't know is. Well, I should say what we do know is the innovation that Microsoft has brought to this so far is they looked at this thing and said, "Hey, this is cool.
We're in.
We're going to put it in the store."
Yeah,
that's
huge.
Amazing.
Yeah,
Google's
mm-hmm.
not doing that right now, but
right.
Microsoft and Google talks to each other. These guys do anyway, and the Google guys were like, "We really want to know about how you're doing this. This looks interesting to us because the Android experience today is you bring up a PWA in Chrome browser and it pops up a little dialogue." Or you can bring down that little menu and it will be in there as well. And that's how you kind of install it onto your phone typically, right? That's pretty good. And a lot of people might argue, I think it's 50-50, whatever, but that might even be a better way to discover new apps and get them installed.
Heck yes.
On your phone.
Yeah.
But Google is looking at this and they're saying, okay, hold on a second. We like this store idea. And I think they're going to do that as well. And I mentioned that Microsoft has looked at the reverse. And I mentioned that they will be... at least they're looking at it, they intend to put the ability to install a PWA from a web browser in Windows 10. It just opens the whole thing up. So when you talk about Apple, you know, how's Apple going to do it? They have add to home screen for web pages. Will they do it that way? Will they add it to the store? You know, no one knows. And we probably won't know until June. We'll see.
And also, to be clear, this is not the same as the web apps that the iPhone first came with. This is not it might
honestly,
superficially be a little like that.
I was going to maybe even more than. I mean, obviously, the technology has improved. I mean, I think it's interesting that you could make the argument that this is a legitimate successor to that, and that some of the important capabilities that didn't exist then exist now, like offline and local data and so forth. I mean, the point behind the web app platform at the time, I think, was to shield the phone from the abuses that could happen if you got too much access to the machine itself. But, I mean...
And you know, Google is in the sense that if you search for PWA, you'll get pulled right to a Google developers page that has your first, you know, PWA program. Here's how you do it.
You know, they're serious about it. Well, they came up with
That's key that there's broad support. Chat room's telling me WebKit, even if Safari isn't in, WebKit is. So,
Yeah, Mozilla has pledged support for this as well.
This is big.
Obviously, you kind of want it from your platform maker. Chrome is interesting because it will be in Chrome OS, right? We can all see that that's going to happen. Mozilla supporting it, I'm not sure what that means. You know, if I chose to run the Firefox browser on my Windows computer or on a Mac or something, does that mean that I could hit a PWA? They'd have to write code that would integrate it with the system. It would work in the browser, of course. Of course it would. But, I mean, I think it's more interesting when it works like an app. Because it is an app, you know. No, that requires the platform.
I think what's interesting about this is it's more user-driven than other technologies have been. Most of the time when you talk about these frameworks, you're solving a developer's problem. But this actually is cleverly designed to solve a user problem, which is the difficulty of finding something on an app store, downloading it, installing it, having different apps on different platforms.
It also, it neatly sidesteps the problem of walled gardens, right? Apple obviously has a vested interest in their app store and their app platform and all that kind of stuff. Google does, Microsoft does too. What this does is it allows developers to write that one app, which is something like Apple typically in the past would have hated.
Right.
But you can target specific platform features and make it unique on that platform too, which, you know, it's a new Apple, right? Tim Cook is running the show. Things are changing. I mean, hopefully they're not stupid about this. But Google and Microsoft are working together on this. I mean, that alone is a miracle. You know?
I know.
So I think anything's possible here.
Yeah. I mean, Microsoft took some early steps. Remember when they had the bridge, the Westminster Bridge, when they were doing the whole bridging strategy? So that idea was to take a website.
Hosted web apps.
Take a website, package it, put it in the store. And a lot of people made apps that way. That probably was their most successful bridge to date.
And it's going away, by the way. So
That's going to go away, right?
They had literally just shipped or were... had completed internally the first version of that when they found out about PWAs. And they went to, that was when they approached Google because they said, it looks like these things are similar. And that was the day they said, like, we just made this thing and we know we're getting rid of it because we're switching to PWAs.
I have drunk your Kool-Aid, Paul. And I found it to be flavorful.
Well, I think it's more fair to say that someone else has made Kool-Aid and both of us have found it to be cool and refreshing.
It's very interesting. And it makes a lot of sense. And of course, the issue, as always with these kinds of things, is can it create performant applications? Obviously, part of it is that it works offline, which is critical. And that's how it's different from the app.
People are going to worry about security. They're going to worry about these things looking like security, websites and not being native.
How performant are they? How secure are they? All of these things. But I think the technology's come a long way since we talked about this last time.
Yeah. No, I mean, look, there are companies that were pioneering that kind of led to this. Netscape, Sun with Java, obviously. You mentioned Apple. Those, even the iPhone in a goofy way with the web apps. I mean, these were all kind of steps toward, you know, they just weren't, those things just weren't viable at the time.
And what's changed is mobile, frankly. Mobile's changed everything. This is really a response to, it's mobile first now, frankly. And so this is a response to that. It used to be desktop first. Mobile apps were kind of adjunct. Yeah. Now it's mobile first.
I mean, Microsoft has, since Windows 8 has tried to bring web developers into the fold, you could write Windows 8 apps in JavaScript, HTML5, and CSS. It didn't work the same way as the other apps as far as like the way you would do layout. You didn't use XAML. You would use HTML, whatever it is. I'm sorry. HTML and CSS, essentially. So it didn't really map. They didn't map to each other. So they were kind of separate things. We talked about how terrible those apps were and the Chris Jones stuff from the Windows Live guys. They made those first mail calendar people app. Those were all HTML5 applications. Mm-hmm. They weren't hosted web apps and they weren't PWAs, but it was an attempt to, get developers on those technologies into Windows. It got probably a lot more sophisticated in Windows 10. But in every case, what you're doing is you're limiting your market to the subset of Windows, which itself is a subset of the wider market. And this is exciting because this will work everywhere.
I want to see Untappd make a progressive web app.
That
would be incredibly easy, actually.
Yeah.
Untappd is an obvious choice for this. Yeah. That's an excellent example of something that would be a great PWA.
Yeah.
Somebody asked me today if my website would be a PWA. And I never thought of it that way.
Think of it as taking a web site and making it an app. That's kind of that. And I tell you what, the chat room is totally confused by this. That's kind of what they think is happening. And it's not that at all.
In fact, it's not like that.
It's more like using now mature web technologies.
Listen, this is what it is. This is the simplest way to explain this. Please. If you're going to learn a program today, you're going to write something like an RSS reader, a to-do app, something like that. But you had to write it for a particular platform. Now, we're going to be swimming in these apps, but they're going to work everywhere. It's so much better. We're still going to have RSS apps and to-do apps, but they're going to be the same on every platform. Well, not exactly the same, I should say. We talked about the Mac Office. They made that big announcement. Like, we've brought all over this cross-platform code or whatever. There's probably some tiny percentage of the code in any one of those apps that's totally cross-platform. It could literally be 100% with PWA. And the version of Office that you run on the Mac could be the same that you run inside of a web browser on Linux or something. It could be the same that you run on the Windows desktop. They could do this. I'm not saying it's going to be easy, but they could do that. That's exciting.
Yeah.
It's going to be.
Yeah, I think so. Well, unfortunately in this realm there's a lot of faddish behavior and it could be just the flavor of the year instead of something long term.
Shut your mouth.
I mean, there's always that risk, but I feel better about this than anything in a long time. I really feel like this is very exciting. I think it's also widely misunderstood. But
I think this is one of those things that has been a dream forever. And if we'd had this discussion in 1999 or in 2003 or whatever year, we would have all agreed that this is a great idea, theoretically. And here are the reasons why that can't happen. Or here are the reasons why it makes more sense for Windows developers to do this other thing or whatever it might be. There would always be these reasons why. And I think the difference today is that those reasons, by and large, are going away. There are, there's always reasons to write native code, of course, and not just games, but very specific, general applications, whatever it is. Even within the world of Microsoft, I mentioned .NET versus .NET Core, if you're a Microsoft stack developer, there are going to be reasons to stick with the thing you're using because you're very specifically involved in that world and there are certain things that are not available on the .NET Core side. That might change over time, it probably will.
Yeah,
but right now that makes sense. It's a transition.
I think the thing people need to see, and I'm curious about this, because the first thing that comes into your mind is, so if you do make an app that could run everywhere, is it kind of like a least common denominator thing? Like, is it just going to you have to make a super simple app and you can't have any features that are tailored to the platform at all? And if you make it like that, is it interesting? Because I think Untappd right now is, it might be an Electron app and it looks very much the same on different platforms,
but
the old app that they used to have that was tailored more for Windows Phone or for iOS, it was better. And so that's the question I have.
Okay. I mean, maybe it was better at the time. I bet if you were to use that app today and compare it to the one you're using today, you would say the new one is actually better because it's evolved over time. I think so.
I kind of hate the new one.
Okay. Well, okay. It's a specific app. But, you know, remember the age-old problem back in the day with Windows Phone at the time, or Windows 8 when that came out. You know, the app makers, Untappd, Facebook, whatever, they want their brand is what matters. They want that thing to look like their thing. Yeah. The notion that all of our apps on Windows have to look the same is one of those things that sounds good. It's the reason Microsoft at some point 20 years ago or whatever made all of the Windows applications, the toolbars and everything, as close to each other as they could. The theory being that if you got used to file whatever, it would always be in the same place. It would make it easier for you to use other apps. If you were a Word expert, you could use Excel very easily. When they actually studied that, what they found is that people are actually smarter than that. They don't need those similarities to exist, and that there are actually good reasons for apps to look completely different, because we have muscle. Well, this is memory, yeah. I guess. But we know that when the pink thing comes up, we're working in Instagram, and it doesn't have to have the exact same kind of widgets and whatever. Yeah. So native, whatever. I mean, I today, these are not PWAs, but I run Google Inbox and Google Calendar and Twitter through Chrome as web apps, you know, to pin to my desktop. There is no jarring experience if I move from, say, Twitter to Adobe Photoshop to Microsoft OneNote or whatever. These are all, they all have their own kind of look and feel. I would describe them as native-ish, you know?
Yeah.
And by the way, for whatever it's worth, I mean, as more and more features come online, as they don't do this today, but the Twitter Lite app could use Windows 10 notifications if they wanted to. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And that would make it seem, you know, you get that kind of black panel that slides in when something happens. It looks like all of the other notifications in Windows 10. That's possible. They could do that right now.
It's exciting. Let's take a quick break to talk about our sponsor. We'll have more in just a bit. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley, Windows Weekly on the air, brought to you this week by Rocket Mortgage. Folks at Rocket Mortgage, well, I should really say the folks at Quicken Loan. Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage because they realized that the traditional mortgage process was kind of stuck in the last century. It needed a customer-focused technological revolution, and that's why they created Rocket Mortgage. Quicken Loans, not a surprise that they've the ones that came up with this. Number one in customer satisfaction, according to J.D. Power, 8 years running. People love Quicken Loans, and now they've taken their platform and made it easy. By the way, we were talking about Super Bowl ads. I loved Keegan Michael Key in the Rocket Mortgage ads on the Super Bowl. Did you see that? It was awesome. If you haven't, go to YouTube and watch it. I should run it instead of me talking about Rocket Mortgage. Except they want me to tell you about how Rocket Mortgage works a little bit. So the idea is, in the old days, to get a home loan, a mortgage, or a refi, you'd go to a bank. You'd go and you kind of plead your case, you'd fill out a long application, and then you'd go home and you'd have homework. You'd have to get your bank statements from years gone by, pay stubs, all sorts of information, prove your residence, all this stuff. And that really takes time. The last time we bought a house, it was 4 years ago, admittedly, and I wish it had been with Quicken Loans. It was with that big bank that you all know. The one that keeps getting in trouble, the big bank. We did all of that. Then we went home, and they kept coming back and saying, "Well, okay, now we need this. Now we need that." By the way, our credit is stellar. It wasn't that. It was just they needed all this paperwork. Fast forward, the next time we buy a house, or if we refi our current house, Rocket Mortgage, you could do it on your phone, and you could do it. It's so fast, you could do it on an open house. Not a month to get the loan. Minutes. You go to rocketmortgage.com/windows. You answer questions you don't even need to look up the answer to. Your name, your address, your birth date, your social, that kind of stuff. They have relationships with all the financial institutions. So you can share your information just by touching a button. And they'll crunch the numbers. And, of course, it's all computerized, so it's instant. You know, you go to the bank. I swear to God. And this was only 4 years ago. The guy was so proud of his specialized mortgage calculator. It was a calculator with buttons, not software, not a program. It was a calculator. They would enter in the rate, the term, the down payment, and go, and then hold it up to you and show you the payment. It was good. It was like dude, this is 2017. What are you nuts? Not in Rocket Mortgage. They get all the information. They crunch the numbers. Minutes later, they come up with a bunch of loans based on your income, your assets, and your credit that you qualify for. You choose the down payment. You choose the term. You choose the rate. It's all there on the screen for you to see. Pick the one you want. Press, that's the one I want. They say approved. You can hold up the phone. Instead of showing you your mortgage payment, hold the phone up to the realtor. Say, hey, we're approved for a loan. We'd like to make an offer. Or you can even, there's a button say print out a letter if your realtor is also stuck in the last century. Rocket Mortgage. I love it. From Quicken Loans. Apply simply. Understand fully. Mortgage confidently. That's their slogan. I'm going to add one more. And do it all quickly on your phone, your laptop, your desktop. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/windows. rocketmortgage.com/windows. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030. We thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support of Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott from Thurrott.com. Mary Jo Foley from allaboutmicrosoft.com. Now we kind of get into the weeds. Let's get into the nitty-gritty. We've been very high level.
We have 6 minutes to finish the following 2,000 topics.
Go.
We can whip through these.
Go.
Speed podcasting.
What do you got? Starting with support changes.
Yeah. So these are actually very important, too. Not so much in the weeds as you might think.
Okay.
So Microsoft had extended support for Windows 10 version 15.11 by 6 months a while ago. And now, no surprise, they're doing the same for the next three versions, 16.07, 17.03, and 17.09. So instead of only supporting these for 18 months, Microsoft is now supporting each of them for 2 years. This is good news for many IT people because they feel like Microsoft's turning the crank too quickly on these updates and they don't have time to deploy them before they go out of service. I'm guessing this is probably going to be the way that Microsoft does this from now on. I would think they're, given that they're doing this for all these releases, I would bet we're going to move to a 24-month schedule.
You know what's interesting about this story?
Yes.
As recently as 4 days ago, this would have been our top story today.
It would have.
How funny, yeah.
Because this is actually kind of a big deal.
It is a big deal, right.
Yeah.
It's good news for IT people, for sure. You know, I think Microsoft did it kind of reticently. They're trying to push people to go faster. They're like, hey, we want to do this every 6 months. You guys, yeah. Don't you want to do this? Yeah, no? Okay. So these things that come out every 6 months, these things like 15.11, 17.03, these are called semi-annual channel releases. That's the official name of how they refer to this. So yeah, you now have 24 months. But, I should be clear. You only have the 24 months if you're running Windows 10 Enterprise or Education. If you're running Home or Pro or IoT, no, you don't have the 24 months. You still have 18. But if you're running Enterprise or Education, you are entitled to these extensions. The other thing to know about extensions, well, it's not necessarily extensions, is, you know, every once in a while, Microsoft also comes out with what they call the long-term servicing channel, which is the version of Windows 10 that comes out, and they say, we're not going to, if you're on this release, we're not going to keep updating you all the time. It's meant for mission-critical systems and things that shouldn't be getting updated on a frequent basis. So the next one of these on the client side that is coming out will be this fall, so probably called 18.09, if they stick with their naming convention. That will be the next long-term servicing channel release of Windows 10. There you go.
I am impressed that you can keep that in your head. I think... I don't remember what happened, but at some point they extended the support time frame for, I believe it was Windows 10 version 15.11, I think.
Yeah, they did.
And
yeah.
Whenever that happened sometime last year, I said,
I had one of those
of those mark my words moments. They're going to do this for every version of Windows 10. And that's what this represents, although only for this specific customer set. It's most important customer set, by the way, which I think is the problem with Windows as a service. Ultimately, on the good news front, like we've been talking about in the past, they just delivered two major feature updates without a lot of problems. That's amazing.
Right. Yeah.
On the bad news front, the biggest part of their customer, the most important part of their customer base anyway, the biggest by revenue, doesn't like to upgrade. And this is kind of indicative of that. But I think the bigger, well, not the bigger, but the other big issue here is the stuff that's tied to this, the other side of the coin, the office side of the coin. You know, so how do we say this? Microsoft.
Well, here's what I said in my headline. I said Microsoft's going to tighten the screws, the office support screws. Okay.
Yeah, I was trying to think of a polite way to say it. That's pretty polite, but I mean, you know, like that a is. Nice way to say it. What I mean is, Microsoft is trying to convince people not just to upgrade to Windows 10, but to keep going with Windows 10 updates as we go forward. And by people, I mean companies, everybody really. But companies are not super interested in this. And so they're extending the support for different versions of Windows 10. That's good. I still wonder if there isn't more extension to be had. I mean, in fact, by the way, if they extend this one more time, we're out to a 3-year time frame. And remind me again what the old schedule was for new versions of Windows. Once every 3 years, right? I mean, that's amazing. We're going to get right back to where we were. But more to the point, there are versions of Office, Office 365 Pro Plus, which is the, I guess we could call it Office as a service, right? This is the version of Office where you get the Office applications, but you license them as if they were a service on an ongoing subscription basis. And then Office 2019, which is the next on-prem version of the traditional Office productivity suite, are now being changed so that they will only work with Windows 10. Mm-hmm. So if this little support change wasn't enough to make you go over the edge, Microsoft is now tying Windows 10 to Office. And man, is that, would you say turning the screws, right? That's a pretty good way to look at it. It's turning the screws.
You know, when they announced Office 2019 at Ignite that there would be another on-prem version of Office, I never even thought to ask them, would this run on Windows 7 and 8.1? I just assumed it would.
Of course it will. It's a desktop suite. Why wouldn't it? Yeah.
But it's not going to. It's not.
Could. I bet it could.
So if you are running Office Pro Plus and you try to run it after January 2020 on Windows 7, I guess you wouldn't because Windows 7 support ends. Windows 8.1. So Windows 8.1 supported till 2023. So say you said, hey, I have Windows 8.1. I'm one of those people. I want to run Office Pro Plus on Windows 8.1. You can't. Sure. They're going to not give you any patches. Like, they're just going to stop supporting you. Boom.
Dun, dun, dun.
Screws tightened. Here's why they said. They say the reason they're doing this is because they're trying to keep people on this fast updating track and that Windows 10 will be in sync with Office Pro Plus and Office 2019. And so you'll get all the best advantages and security and blah, and blah. That's their reason for doing this. But it's also to get people off the platform, the older platforms for sure. If you're using Office via desktop virtualization or remoting, we don't know what they're going to do. And they were very vague on that. They said, we're going to have more to say this fall about how we're going to support you going forward. So that's all we know on that. There you go. Support in a nutshell. Boom.
Interesting. Interesting.
Yep.
I don't know. Did you do the proof that Windows as a service cannot work for Microsoft's most important customers?
Yeah, we can move on. I don't want to beat that one too.
All right.
I've proven it. Yes, it's a fact.
It's a fact. Here's another story that might have been top of the charts.
Yes, exactly right.
I think Microsoft announced its quarterly earnings last week.
It did, right after we ended the show.
Yeah, it's all old news now.
I know. Yeah.
What did we learn? What have we learned?
Yeah, there's a couple things worth noting from it. So this was their fiscal Q2 for 2018. They had a good quarter, very solid quarter. My colleague Larry Dignan at ZDNet was looking at the sequential commercial cloud numbers, and he said, you know what? If you look year over year, of course, they're way up on what they're doing in the cloud. But if you look sequentially, it's starting to slow down. And of course, you say, of course, as it gets bigger, it's going to start slowing. But they had some softness in their bookings. And that's kind of interesting.
You
that
don't
things
want soft
slowed.
Bookings.
So, really, by the way,
no one wants soft bookings.
You can also put some math to the commercial cloud stuff, because obviously Microsoft always talks about the cloud as the future of the company, but this is what Wall Street wants to hear. I've argued in the past that this commercial cloud thing is not really a thing, right? It's not a business unit. It's products and services that they take from different business units, you know, whatever. What you want to do is be able to compare this thing to AWS, right? How is this thing doing? It's hard to compare, but this is one way we could compare it. For the quarter ending at end of December, AWS hit $5.11 billion in revenue. Microsoft's commercial cloud, which again, not exactly a business unit, hit $5.3 billion. But if Azure, which I think is the thing that most closely aligns to AWS on the Microsoft side, is part of something called Intelligent Cloud. Intelligent Cloud, all of Intelligent Cloud, saw revenues of $2.8 billion. So if you assume that Azure is most of even if it is all of Intelligent Cloud, Azure at best is about 50% the size of AWS at best.
And Azure is definitely not all of Intelligent Cloud because SQL Server's in there too.
Yep.
SQL's in there.
Oh, that's a good point. I mean, they could be as little as one quarter the size.
Yeah, we don't know. We don't know Azure's numbers at all. But Microsoft has started publishing real numbers instead of run rates for, you know, what they're doing in commercial cloud, what they're doing in commercial cloud gross margins. And it looks good. Wall Street likes what they're doing. And until the recent stock correction, they were doing well. Sure. Yeah, there are a couple other things worth saying about earnings. Surface business was up 1%. Which surprised a lot of people because Microsoft announced four new products last year in the Surface lineup. And so it's interesting in their holiday quarter, which you would think there'd be a lot of gifting and such, they weren't way up. They were not.
It's important to compare that one year over year as well, because if you go back to the same quarter a year ago, we were at the tail end of a year in which they released no major new products. In fact, we spent the entire year wondering when they were going to do that, assuming they were going to do it because they had all those reliability problems. And then right at the end of the year, they announced two niche products, Surface Book with Performance Base, incredibly, you know, an expensive version of Surface Book, and Surface Studio, right?
Yeah.
These two devices account for some less than 1% of Surface usage. They're incredibly low volume devices. Mm-hmm. And yet, in a year in which Microsoft released, what'd you say, four major new, or at least new Surface products. Surface laptop, Surface laptop, new Surface Pro, Surface Book 2 in two versions, by the way. And also, by the way, Surface Pro with LTE, if you want to kind of throw that out as a separate thing too.
Yeah.
Revenues were up 1%. 1%.
Yeah.
And actually, there was a number attached to it. I think it was something along the lines of
29.95.
No, let me see. Why don't I have that right in front of me? Thought it was, well, it doesn't really matter. It's a small business. I mean, ultimately what we're coming to here is that, like I said earlier, Surface Laptop has not emerged. This is mainstream success story like I thought it was going to. And this thing, which is ostensibly it's a billion-dollar business from sort of a run rate perspective, but in the scope of like PC makers, it's a boutique business. It's really small.
And you know, they may be fine with that because they always said, you know, we're running that business to show people what they should build and blah and blah. So I, you know, of course, they'd like it to have more 1%, money.
That has to be disappointing. But just to be clear, surprising. I mean, I actually would have assumed that this would have been a dramatic increase year to year.
Yeah, I was a little bit surprised. But also, don't forget, Consumer Reports ding them too, and I don't know how much of an effect that had.
Microsoft responded very quickly to this, and it's interesting. I think they waited to, you know, for their earnings to come out before they did this. I'm sure they had their legal reasons for it, but they announced new low-end versions of both Surface Laptop and Surface Book right after they announced these numbers, and you know, to lower the average selling price of the devices, because you know, obviously the problem with the Surface stuff is that it's expensive. These are premium PCs, so I think Surface Laptop, you can get a version that costs, I want to say $799, and then Surface Book, I believe the lowest end version is now
$1,199.
Okay.
So that's earnings. Earnings in a nutshell.
Boy, there wasn't much to say.
Well, you know what? Give it, and I mean, in a different week, and you know, top story. We could have spent an hour on this. I mean, but
right. I know.
It's a big business and it's steamrolling along. I think there's some interesting data points, and I think, but we covered, you know, that we covered.
Yeah.
All right. Bill 28. We don't know when.
Team. Well, we do know when.
28.
Well, if that leak is right, right?
Oh, there's a leak.
So I've heard this from a separate source. Here's okay. the issue. Microsoft had this date for build internally, May 7 to 9. If you look up Google I/O, you'll see that Google I/O is at that time as well.
Uh-oh.
And Microsoft typically has announced the date for build by now, you know, if you know, ahead of time. They've not done so. I don't know why they waited so long.
I know.
Now that Google has announced their I/O date, maybe they're scrambling to find a different time to do that because nothing would be more horrible for Microsoft than hosting a developer show at the same time as Google and having a lot fewer people show up because those guys wanted to go to Google.
I know.
I don't know if that would happen exactly. I'm not sure if that many developers would go, you know, choose between the two or would go to both or whatever, but they still have not officially announced it. But that's the plan, Seattle. Early May, and we'll see if it happens.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If I were them, you know what? I would do it the week after Google I/O.
Mm-hmm. Give them a chance to potentially scramble to respond.
Settle down, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, we don't pick the dates, and they still haven't announced. I asked them again this week. So is the leak correct? And they wouldn't say.
Well, at least it's in Seattle again. I mean, I'm actually kind of excited about that.
Me too. Same. Yep.
All right. And finally, a little PUBG news in our Xbox.
Yeah, Mary Jo, this is going to take about 20 minutes, so you don't want to just
relax and enjoy.
No, these two are quick. Microsoft this week announced an Xbox One S bundle with PUBG, Player Unknown's Battlegrounds, right? It's it's $199. It's a 1 terabyte version of the console. It's coming later this month. Who cares, right? Like, what's the big deal? The big deal might be that PUBG is not available it's not a completed game. It's in a preview beta version right now. And I'm actually wondering if this release is not tied to the fact that this thing will be coming out of beta, right? But would they
Maybe Microsoft's about to buy it.
Mm. Or that too. That's true, by the way. I'm surprised that hasn't happened. So anyway, I only note this because it's possible that this indicates they're reaching some level of quality soon and they expect to release the final version.
Yeah.
Not that it won't keep being updated, but it's been a kind of a unique release so far. The other thing is, I think this might date back to E3 last year, but at some point last year, Microsoft announced a new version of the Xbox wireless adapter. This is a little nubbin you plug into the USB port on your computer so that you can use an Xbox controller wirelessly. They had originally intended to ship it sometime last fall. They delayed it. It's actually available now if you want to buy it. The reason you want this thing is that it works with the new controllers. It has less latency. And the adapter itself is much smaller. The other thing was this giant candy bar looking thing. This is like a tiny little guy. And this is probably the best way to do this now going forward.
That's it?
That's it.
Come on. There's got to be something else.
Sorry.
No. I'm just teasing Mary Jo. All right. That means the back of the book is coming up.
Mm-hmm.
That's very good news because it means the show's almost over.
That's right.
Oh, no. That's not good news. No. The back of the book is our picks of the week, tips of the week, code names, things like that, and beer. Beer is here. But first, a word from WordPress, our sponsor, WordPress. We know that building something new, something that others connect with, is a lot easier with the right tools, right? That's why I'm thrilled to have WordPress.com as a sponsor. I use them. I've used them for years. I use them every day. Let me tell you, whether you're looking to help create a personal blog, a website, a business site, or both, creating your website on WordPress.com helps others find you, remember you, and connect you. You don't need experience. You don't need to hire somebody. WordPress.com guides you through the entire process from start to finish. They take care of the technical side, so it's easy to get your site up and running. They have hundreds of beautiful designs to choose from, and you get the features that, you know, you really need, like that you don't even need to do anything for, like built-in search engine optimization and social sharing. Their business plan lets you access, that's the plan I have, by the way, the hundreds of plugins and themes. It's worth it, too, because I can bring my own plugins, bring my own themes on my plan. Their customer support team, fantastic, made up of WordPress experts eager to help you get the most from your site. And they're there 24 hours a day, Monday through Friday, and weekends, too. Plans start at just $4 a month. Come see why 29% of all websites run on WordPress. Get started today with 15% off any new plan purchase. Go to WordPress.com/windows to create your website and find the plan that's right for you. That's WordPress.com/windows for 15% off your brand new website. We thank WordPress for their support. Let's kick things off with Paul Thurrott and his tip of the week.
So, Microsoft, in the span of just a few days this past week, released two different ways to get Cortana above the lock screen on your Android device. The first one is the Microsoft Launcher, which, of course, is their replacement for the Android Launcher. That makes sense, right? This is like an integrated package. It's like having a Microsoft phone. But they also released an update to the Cortana app. So if you don't want to use the Microsoft Launcher, but you still want to use Cortana, now you can get Cortana above the lock screen via an update to the Cortana app. So if you're already using it, you'll get it automatically. That's available now. I actually don't like the way it works, by the way. It's kind of a, you know, those little things they have in Android where you can have like a little transparent circle or whatever, and it moves around the screen. You can put it wherever you want. It's that kind of thing. But if you need
that's
access
so
to Cortana,
I don't like it.
But you know, if you're a Cortana person. The other thing is, it's the beginning of a new month, of course, and we have a new round of games with gold, including, by the way, Classic Shadow Warrior, which is one of my favorite PC shooters, is out now, and Split Second on Xbox 360, and then there'll be two more coming out later this month, one of which is an Assassin's Creed Chronicles game, meaning one of the sideways scrollers, not the full-blown Assassin's Creed games, but those are pretty cool, too. And my app pick of the week is Opera 51, which just came out today. It's funny how they're advertising it. It's Opera, by the way, uses the Chrome rendering engine, so it's kind of a way to get Chrome without any of the Google stuff, and it has its own unique UI with social networking integration and other stuff. I find it a little busy, although you can customize it however you want. But one of the things that's emerged in recent weeks is this thing called Speedometer 2.0, which is a way to measure the performance of a browser running typical web app technologies. And so I couldn't find my results, but I had run this test across Chrome, Firefox, and Edge. And basically what I found was that Chrome was faster than Firefox, and both of them were much faster than Edge. That's basically the way it worked out.
That's interesting, huh?
Yeah, so now Opera 51 is touting their gains in this performance test. Of course, they use the Chromium, you know, web render, so it's probably pretty similar to what you see in Chrome. But what they're saying is that they are approximately, I think it's 38. Is that the right number? Yeah, 38% faster than Firefox. So one of the big reasons someone might have switched to Firefox over the past couple of months is that the latest versions of Firefox offer dramatically better performance than Firefox had in the past, and better resource usage than Chrome. I did use it for a couple of months. I ended up switching back for a variety of reasons. The big one being that I'm still running Chrome anyway, so it's, you know, it just going between two different browsers got kind of tedious. But if you want the benefits of Chrome without a lot of the Google baloney, this might be something to look at. Just if only for the performance aspect of it.
That's their selling point. All the benefits of Chrome without the Google baloney.
Without the Google BS, yeah. Yep. I should be in marketing.
Mary Jo Foley, let's do it. The enterprise pick of the week.
If you are a business with 500 users or more, and you are not currently
Have I got a deal for you?
If you're not currently a OneDrive for Business customer or an Office 365 customer, Microsoft is going to make you a little deal. Starting February 6th, which was yesterday, until June 30th, you can, if you have Box, Dropbox, or Google Drive in your company, use this new switching offer that Microsoft has to get OneDrive for Business for free. Ooh. For the duration of your contract, up to 3 years with any of those vendors. So, you know, this is a pretty specialized case. You have to be a brand new customer. You still have to pay for your existing contract with one of those vendors if you have one. But you can start using OneDrive for Business for free just to see how it works. And Microsoft thinks if you do that and you happen to use other Office apps or Office 365 apps, that you might be a good candidate to switch. Mm-hmm. So I was actually interested to see them do this switching campaign because it felt like for the past year or so that they were kind of rolling over for their competitors, I thought, in the cloud storage space. You know, they were doing deals with Box, deals with Dropbox, being all partner happy, partner centric. And it was like, okay, do you guys actually want someone to use OneDrive or do you not really care? So it shows there's still a little fight left in Microsoft in this space. I've got a post on my site with a link to where the switching offer is and, you know, some of the fine print around if you're an EA customer and such. But, you know, it could be a good deal for people who aren't already OneDrive for Business customers.
Right.
So give it a check out.
Cool. And, well, if we've done the Enterprise Pick of the Week, I think it must be Codename Pick of the Week, huh?
Yes. Yeah. So we had Polaris as a big topic on Windows Weekly recently, and we talked about Polaris being the code name for the desktop shell for Windows 10 in the future. I got a tip right after that. You know what? There's another Polaris at Microsoft. This is not the only Polaris. And listener Scott Dines sent me a link to a GitHub project. There is another Microsoft Polaris. Polaris is also a cross-platform minimalist web framework for PowerShell that's built on .NET Standard. So just to make things extra confusing, there are now at least two Polaris projects at Microsoft that have absolutely nothing to do with each other. This Polaris is the one that is about PowerShell.
How funny. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So another Polaris is the code name of the week.
We'll start with that. Finally, let's have a little beer.
Yeah, I feel like I've been doing a lot of heavy-ish beer picks lately. so I said, you know, let me go down to a 5.9%, something more drinkable, yet very tasty. So if you've ever had any of the Boulder Brewing beers, they're excellent from Colorado. There is a beer called the Boulder Shake Chocolate Porter that is delicious. Yum, yum. It tastes like chocolate, as you might imagine from the name. And the reason it tastes like chocolate is kind of cool. It uses cacao nibs in the beer, but also chocolate wheat.
Ooh.
So it comes out really dark, chocolatey. Some people say caramel. Cacao? Is that how you say it?
Cacao.
It's like a skit from, what's that movie?
Cocoa. Is that how you say it or not?
Yes, that's cacao. How you say it. Cacao.
Are you making fun of me, Mr. P. Interest?
Cacao. It's called, what did you think it was, cocoa?
Cacao.
It's the bean, not cocoa. Cocoa right. is a cacao derivative.
Yes.
I'm sorry. Right. I'm not actually debating how it's pronounced.
Don't.
I thought you were making fun of me.
Second guess. Foley. She knows whereof she speaks.
Yeah. So it's if you guys see it, they bottle and distribute widely, and it's a really nice beer. It's Boulder Shake Chocolate Porter.
Yum, yum. Yum, yum. It's full of cacao.
Cacao.
Cacophony. Yeah. It's delicious. Oh, hi, cacao. So,
movie with Jamie Lee Curtis and John Cleese.
Cacao kapow.
With the stutterer.
Cacao. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this fabulous, fabulous edition of Windows Weekly. Cacao. As oftenly has the case, we have impressed all and sundry with Mary Jo Foley and Paul Thurrott's grasp of the fundamental issues at hand and their deeply eloquent exposition on all matters. Redmondo.
Cacao.
Cacao.
Come on. Now I'm going to be self-conscious about how
cacao.
I pronounce
it. No, I'm sorry. You are obviously pronouncing it correctly, but what the heck is that movie with the British thing with the
cacao?
Ken, you're stuttering the, what is, I don't know.
The Fish Called Wanda?
Oh, yes, thank you. Ken, stuttering Ken, yes.
Isn't that like a skit from that movie? It's like, yeah. Cacao.
Cacao. Cacao. Cacao.
They're bean-like seeds from which cocoa butter, and chocolate are made.
Cacao.
Yep. A small
I will be vindicated on this.
A small tropical evergreen tree that bears these seeds, which are contained in large oval pods that grow on the trunk.
Cacao.
Jeez, that's vaguely creepy.
It is vaguely.
That is pretty
entirely,
creepy.
Entirely. Yeah, it's it Cortana's is. Cacao. Cortana is a cow. No, no, that we wouldn't. Paul Thurrott is at Thurrott.com, Thurrow.com. That's where he, Brad Sams, and many others pen their way to literary success.
And they fight fires and, also.
And boy, they have a great costume department.
Just a reminder, he had the option not to post that publicly.
Yeah.
It's so
but
cute.
Knowing that he did.
Chose to do that.
We kind of beg.
It's
little Brad. Little Brad. Happy at last. Well. he also publishes the books, not Brad, Mr. Thurrott, at leanpub.com. Mary Jo Foley is at allaboutmicrosoft.com. That's her ZDNet blog. They convene each Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern. That would be 1900 UTC to deloquate and escalate the exacerbation of Windows and its siblings.
I need to parse that for a few seconds.
It doesn't even make sense. I just threw in words that make no sense. If you wish to join them, please tune in live at twit.tv/live round about that time. Or you can be in the chat room at irc.twit.tv. They're already thinking of exciting new titles for the show. You can also... You can also watch on demand after the fact. We have, of course, every show ever made at twit.tv/WW, all 556 episodes. Because Paul and I started doing this when we were in our teens.
Yeah.
That's right.
And
a lot of towel snapping in the gym at high school when we started.
Cacao! Cacao! We also are in every podcast platform possible. iTunes, Overcast, Pocket Cast, you know. Just subscribe. That way you'll have every episode of Windows Weekly the minute it is made available on the interwebs. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Mary Jo. We'll see you next week on Windows Weekly.
Cacao.
Cacao.